Ya lo hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Thursday, December 12th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins, as always, and busy show today, Dwayne. A lot of news to talk about, looking at Europa League, the Champions League. We'll look at the Player of the Year in Canada, Player of the Year in the USA, also for the U.S. Men's National Team. We're talking about in the men's game here. And also, the road to the Gold Cup 2021. We know how the four remaining open spot will be determined for the 2021 Gold Cup. But first of all, how you doing, Dwayne?
I'm doing well. It's a cold, cold day here. It's supposed to get a little more milder this weekend, but I think we're in for the long haul now. But nonetheless, Christmas season going on. We'll get through this with all of our football talk. Excited. Watched a lot of great games over the last few days. Going to wrap up with the final game of the Europa this afternoon. Looking forward to that. So, you know, December, 'tis the season for watching European football, really.
I watched Al Sadd versus Yengen yesterday in the Club World Cup. Yengen actually took Al Sadd to extra time, but finished losing the game 3-1. That was unfortunate. One of the weirdest. And, you know, I like indirect free kick. And there was one in this game. That tells you all you need to know. When a team concedes, usually an indirect free kick, yeah, it tells you the level of Yengen. But good on them for bringing the club from Qatar to extra time.
Well, can you imagine the thrill? Like, I mean, I know he wasn't playing, but he's managing this team. You're a bunch of players from New Caledonia. You're one of them is an administrator at a private school. Like, they're essentially just amateurs, and they're playing Xavi's team. Obviously. Like, come on, man! Like, that's the stuff of dreams.
Yep, and the dream lasted a bit more than 90 minutes, but it did not continue. Again, this competition will continue this weekend, and we'll take a look at the games a bit more in depth in the next week. Big news coming out of Toronto. It was maybe the worst kept secret in Major League Soccer. Michael Bradley stays with TFC, but not as a DP. He is now a targeted allocation money player.
This was never not going to happen. I know that a lot of TFC folks, they have the PTSD still. I'm not sure why. It's been a long time now. I mean, I've been doing preparation for our end of our decade end lists. And when you start to look at the decade, you can really clearly divide it between the first 5 years and the last 5 years in many ways and many different levels. Like across international football, there's a divide that kind of starts there. MLS, there's a divide that kind of starts there. And there most definitely is a divide that starts there with TFC, because the last half of the decade, there's no PTSD. In fact, there's a lot of privilege and riches, right? They've seen a lot of good stuff. So the fact that they were going to somehow screw this up was never going to happen. And it's really an interesting signing to me, in that I've, you know, lived in this city for 20 years now, for the most part. And I've seen a lot of high-profile signings, re-signings, negotiations for Toronto sports teams. I can't remember one that mattered as much to the team at hand that was handled as quietly and as efficiently as this one. Usually there's drama, and I guess maybe that's where some of the PTSD comes from too. Yeah. And it just wasn't here.
Kawhi, maybe that's where the PTSD comes from too, and that is a very topical topic, I guess, this morning, because, well, he was in Toronto last night, but did not necessarily play, but he got his ring. This is not a Raptors show. But just to continue, Michael Bradley will remain the heart of TFC for the next 2 years. And the fact that he's a TAM player now frees up a DP spot. What do you expect Toronto to do with that empty DP spot? Knowing MLSC and Toronto FC, they're going to fill it. But wait, what type of player?
Yeah, no. Well, I think they've been pretty clear that they're going to fill it with a forward player. I think that they believe that Domhnal Gonzalez, as a TAM signing last year, was enough on the defensive side of the game, that if they sort of maybe add a few depth pieces there that they might be able to get internally or develop from elsewhere in MLS, that they can handle any shortcomings they had at the back. And to be honest, it's hard to look at TFC 2019 and not think of them as a good defensive team. But if you look at TFC 2019, once Gonzalez sort of settled into that lineup, they weren't a bad MLS defensive team anymore. And maybe that's as good as they can be, and they're going to spend as much as they want to spend it. And they're pretty clearly, in my mind, going to spend it with a wide player. I put a tweet out a few minutes ago as a joke. Maybe it's a bit of a wishful thinking joke, but a joke that Aaron Robin might be, he might coax him out of retirement again. He might be.
Have you? Oh no, it's fine. I always mixed up Robin and Snyder for some reason. Have you seen pictures of Wesley Snyder recently? Yeah, he's never coming out of retirement. But Aaron Robin, okay, maybe.
Yeah, no, he just retired this year. So he retired in the summer. So yeah, he said he'd leave the door open. But it's that type is what I think that's the type of player that they want. Like that's I watched a lot of Bayern Munich over the past couple of years, as I've said many times before. And Robin was still a dominant player in Bundesliga last year. So he clearly could come to MLS and be just fine. But the point with that was that's the type of player that they want. They need a world-class wing type player. When I say world class, I'm referring to MLS world class, which, you know, are guys that are just a tier below usually or on the end of their career, which is what I'm talking about here. So I think that's likely what they're targeting. They have, you know, the creative guy in Pozuelo, which was essentially brought in to replace Vasquez, as most people understand. Well, Vasquez wasn't a DP. He was the quality of one. So they, you know, replaced him with Pozuelo, who I think over the course, you know, it was mixed last year, but he started brilliantly, kind of faded in the middle, which you might understand having played it, you know, an entire calendar year straight, and then came on a little bit at the end as well. So give him some rest, and I think that you're settled there. You brought in a TAM player and Gonzalez, who I think solidified the back line. You have Josie, hopefully healthy, which, you know, is always dangerous, but maybe you addressed the depth issue at the forward. Yeah, Mullins coming back if he wants to, and you as a third option. Hopefully you can get something to back him up, and then you look at the creativity off the wings, that sort of spark that was lost when Giovinco was left to open up things for the nine, for Josie or whoever's up there, and that's what they need. And you know, I think they've been pretty clear that they want it to be a wide player, which is, you know, in line with the rest of the world right now.
Yep, no, it is. You mentioned Giovinco. Let's put it out there. The rumor of him wanting to come back to Toronto is not dying. Anything true in that rumor, do you think? Is it even possible? Right now, Giovinco is with Hilal in the Club World Cup, playing in Saudi Arabia. Any chance he ever comes back to Toronto?
I'm looking forward to waking up Saturday morning to watch Sebastian Giovinco on TV again. I'm not going to lie, and I think a lot of TFC fans feel the same way. But a lot of what is being fueled here is that kind of thinking more than anything real. Now, that said, they have spoken. I mean, Giovinco's family still lives in Toronto. He is in Toronto a lot more than people realize. He had a much better relationship with management than people think, too, just because he left because he felt that the offer wasn't good enough. Him and his agent, I should say, felt that the offer was not good enough. He has the idea that he has expressed an interest to return to Toronto is not fiction. The idea that they can figure a way to do that is probably a bit of fiction. The question of whether they should, well, that's a more interesting one, because Giovinco is not the pure winger that we spoke of. He does have that sort of creativity and that freestyle kind of style to him. Obviously, the free kicks don't go away. He'd still be a star on that level and probably score 5 or 6 goals just off of dead balls in the year if he were to come back. But so I don't think if he were to walk through the door and go, "I'd like to be a TAM player, please," they're writing a check that day, right? Like, well, they have to trade to get the allocation order first. Well, yeah. That's another issue altogether. But they're figuring it out. Now, for them to spend their DP money on him, that's a completely different story. And for that one, I think you do have to take a step back as a TFC fan and take your fan hat off, and which I'm not judging at all, because as I said, I'm waking up Saturday morning to watch him because he was brilliant to watch and I missed watching him last year. But yeah, you got to take the fan hat off in this particular case and go, is he the right kind of player for what they need to get over the top in 2019? You know, if there was no cap, no limitation on the type of players you can win, I mean, sure, what the hell? but I think that he plays too similar of a game to Pozuelo, too central for what they need, and that they would have a difficult time probably figuring out a way to play them all, because you're probably pushing Osorio out wide again if that happens, and I don't think you want to do that anymore. And it would be too complicated. But that said, you know, there's a business side of it too, and there is no doubt that if they were to, you know, let's just say for the sake of argument that during the press conference in an hour and a half, they go, oh, we have another surprise announcement, and they cut live to a screen, and there's Sebastian Giovinco going, hey, I'm coming back to Toronto. You know, people are going to lose their mind, and they would buy tickets. So, and they buy jerseys again, and they'd be very excited. Although maybe they've sold all the jerseys they can. I don't know. He definitely would have, he would definitely have an impact business-wise, but I don't think TFC operates that way. I mean, there's a perception for those outside the Toronto market to want to paint MLSE as completely business focused, but that's not the reality of how they've operated on any of their sports for about 5 or 6 years. So I don't think that will happen, but it's nice to think of it. It's nice to have a player like that. And maybe one day, you know, when his contract runs out, maybe you bring him back as a bench player at that point, because he lives here anyway. Maybe. I'm not holding that against. There's nothing wrong with that in sports in general, of bringing back a legend at the end. I think that sports fans sometimes get too caught up in the, like, oh, we can't be too emotional, blah, blah, blah. Of course you can. You should be emotional. That's what the damn thing's about. But you do have to, you know, temper that with a little bit of expectations. If you're, you know, bringing him in at $10 million, it's easy to spend someone else's money, right? So, yeah.
Yep, and we'll keep an eye. In other news, Jonathan David has been named Canada Player of the Year for 2019 for his contribution with the men's national team in the Gold Cup this summer, Golden Boot, and also a few crucial important goals throughout the year for the men's national team, and also played amazingly for his Belgium side again. So, Jonathan David, Canadian Player of the Year.
Talked a lot about this on Two Solitudes yesterday. So for $2 a month or more, you can get that conversation in detail. But the TLDR of it is that I felt, as someone who voted for him over Davies, albeit I voted Davies second, that David had a better overall club career over the course of the calendar year. Now, had the vote taken place today instead of 3 weeks ago, which sounds ridiculous, but it really in this case isn't, I might have gone Davies instead for the very reason he has clearly demonstrated that he is the starting left back for Bayern Munich now. And, you know, that might be the case for years to come, in which case he's going to have a difficult – it's going to be a difficult to justify anyone else but him winning for years to come. So maybe it's a good thing they got it in when he could. But putting that aside, Jonathan David, you could make the argument for him, right? And that's a really good thing for Canada fans. And I think that, you know, his Gold Cup performance was pretty good, was remarkable, and that's what cast him there. The other thought I have on it, Kevin, is that I don't think he wins this 6 years ago, even with the same stats, same numbers, because I don't think the voters paid as close attention to stuff that was happening in Europe 5-6 years ago. The overall voting base for Canadian Men's Player of the Year and Women's Player of the Year is a little more informed now than it was in the past, and I think that this is an indication of that, and I applaud that. I think that it's a worthwhile pick, and I'm glad that he won it. Tough time for him personally, obviously. We've talked about that, but, you know, too bad. I don't think this is going to erase the pain of that, but maybe it will help him honor the memory of his mother a little bit more.
In other news also, Christian Pulisic voted U.S. Men's National Team Player of the Year for 2019. And Dwayne, when I talked to you about that news, you mentioned to me, related news also, water is still wet.
Yeah, and the sky's also still blue.
And you know what? Winter's still cold in Canada.
Yeah, no. I don't know who else could win it. I'm trying to think, like, who's even second in that voting, really, on the men's side. It's been, you know, well documented, the struggles on the men's side of the game in the U.S. Pulisic has been a bright spot for both fans and for administrators. And he is the bright light that you can hold up as being illustrative of the fact that maybe not everything is as bad as the naysayers say. But, you know, it's a deserved pick. And one that I just like Davies, we'll see quite a bit of in the years ahead, I think.
I think so as well with Chelsea. Of course, he finally broke through the starting 11, playing really well for Chelsea over the last few weeks. And, of course, played well for the national team this summer and the Gold Cup and other competition he has been a part of, like the CONCACAF Nations League, which they win their group and they're going to the finals of that tournament. So I don't know what else to say about J. Dave and Pulisic, but congratulations to both players, respectively, U.S. Men's National Team and Canadian Player of the Year.
Yeah, precisely, and we'll wait today to find out who the Canadian Women's Player of the Year is. That announcement will probably come a little bit later on this afternoon, and we'll talk about it tomorrow on this show for sure.
Exactly. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take a trip to the old continent.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
Yes, it's me. We're traveling today. We're going to the old continent. Yes, it's Dwayne's Europa vacation. Dwayne. How was your flight?
Good flight. Good flight. I'm not going to put the French accent on. That's no. Oh. Kevin can do it. He's okay. Allowed.
Yes, I'm allowed because I can. Yes, we're going to talk about the Europa League in a second. Today is the last day of the group stage of the Europa League, so there's about 2,000 games today. But Dwayne, can you give us a TLDR version of Europa League today?
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to start with this. There are 18 of the 32 teams that are going to be in the final 32 already decided heading into this. That's a combination of the teams that have clinched through the group stages and the teams that dropped down, the eight teams that dropped down yesterday. Quickly, they are Sevilla, Port Sporting, Celtic, Espanyol, Ghent, Wolfsburg, Braga, Wolves, United, AZ, Club Rouge, so get your oons going there, Olympiacos, Inter, Red Bull Salzburg, and Ajax. So it's not a bad lineup going there. Several games going on today that are of interest. I have highlighted two for your viewing pleasure, folks, for your DAZN viewing pleasure or your ESPN Plus viewing pleasure in the States. I am going to pick for my 12:55 game today, Standard Liège versus Arsenal. That is a game that Arsenal desperately needs to win to ensure themselves a trip to the final 32, which I think everyone understands is Arsenal's only pathway to the Champions League next year right now. They are currently up in a Group F by 1 point over Eintracht. Liège is 7 points, so they could also advance with a win over Arsenal, so that is a big game there. That is my 12:55 game. My 3 p.m. game is Mönchengladbach versus Istanbul Başakşehir, which I can never say properly, but you know, the third team in Istanbul that wears orange. So anyway, that group is 8-8-7. Roma is the other team in there. Mönchengladbach, of course, leading the Bundesliga right now. Not as doing as well in Europa League, but it would be very interesting to see if they can advance. That is my pick for 3 o'clock. If you want a second game for 3 o'clock and you like your soccer with a little bit of a Scottish edge, Rangers v. Young Boys, because that is a battle for Rangers to advance to the round of 32, which would be a long way back for a club that was a long way down after the financial troubles of the last decade. Hell of a lot more games going on, though. So there's something for everyone if you really want. That is your Europa League look, your 2 minutes of Europa, my Europa vacation for December 13th.
Yes, alors, this was a European vacation, but today we're going to stay a little bit longer on the old continent because I'm going to drop the accent right about now. Champions League has wrapped up its group stage, and we know who moves on in the Champions League. Dwayne, let's start with, first of all, stopping that damn music, and with Group A. Oh, shocking! PSG and Real Madrid out of Group A.
Yeah, well, water rat wet, as we said earlier. Look, PSG, I think, arguably, it's a weird year in Europe. The best teams got through. There was an article in The Guardian today that talked about how, like, you know, the top 16, basically 10 of the top 16 financial teams in the world are in the final 16 right now. There have been very few upsets. The closest thing to an upset is Leipzig getting through. It's kind of a chalk group stage, and that's something we talked about a lot during the year. But there's this group, that said, is you know, it's pretty strong, and Real Madrid finished below PSG in the group standings, which means that the English clubs are all looking at each other going, who's gonna deal with them, because one of them's gonna have to.
Yep, one of them's gonna have to. Group B, Bayern Munich, Tottenham, also water still wet, snow is still falling. We are in Canada. Bayern Munich winning the group with 15 points. Tottenham second with 10 points. The special one is going back to the knockout stage.
Yeah, Bayern went perfect through this. That is historic for them, historic for German teams. They're playing that up quite a bit. And Bayern Munich has been weird this year. They have looked really good in Europe. They have not looked so good in the league. I think they're a dark horse to win this thing at this point. And maybe it's just my Alphonso Davies goggles are on, but I do. And he had a great game yesterday, too, against Spurs, if you watch that back.
5 goals allowed in Bayern Munich in 6 games of the Champions League. 24 goals scored. That's pretty impressive there, because, yes, there were some 5-0, 5-1 big games here. But Bayern Munich defensively, I don't know if it's because of the wunderkind Alphonso Davies, but 5 goals allowed only in 6 games played against, like, Champions League opposition. This is pretty impressive.
No, for sure. As I said, I mean, it's hard to call Bayern Munich a dark horse, but considering their league form, if they were to go deep in this competition, I think most people would be a little surprised by it. So within the context of the Champions League, I'm calling Bayern Munich a dark horse to win this year's Champions League.
Group C, Manchester City 4-2-0 in the group, winning with 14 points. Atalanta second, Donetsk and Zagreb going home. Man City, Atalanta to the knockout stage.
Yeah, look, City did what it did, didn't lose. So, I mean, you can't complain too much. They didn't look ever great in any of them, but they, you know, that they won 4-1 yesterday. So it's not like they struggled to get through. Atalanta, they were in last place in the group until two stages ago, and sort of propelled themselves into the second of the group yesterday, and that was a remarkable thing for them. And I think that they'll look at that as a great success for a club that's not used to being in the Champions League. So good for Atalanta.
And before yesterday's win, they were on a 3-game no win streak, I would say, because they draw 1, they lost 2. Those are league games. Before that, they had 2 victories, and with yesterday's victory, they go over Shakhtar Donetsk. And Donetsk with 6 points, they might not even make it to Europa League, I believe. But let's continue.
No, they're in, but yeah.
They're in, but yeah, barely. Group D, again, a group that was a bit predictable. Juventus, Atletico Madrid moving on. Bayer Leverkusen going to the Europa League. And Juventus, Atletico Madrid going to the knockout stage. And Lokomotiv Moscow going back in the train to Moscow.
Yeah, and again, this is another, if you look at the way the draw is made for the final 16, you can't play a team from your group, you can't play a team from your country in the round of 16. After that, the country rule, everything's out the window, you get who you get. In this particular case, if you look at the English teams that have won their group, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, the 2 Madrid clubs are both there as huge banana peels for the big clubs that have won their group. So it's a tough draw for the English teams in the round of 16.
Moving on to Group E, Liverpool winning the group 4-1-1, Napoli second. Moving on to the knockout stage, Liverpool and Napoli. Red Bull third, going to Europa League, so Jesse March is going to the Europa League with Red Bull, Salzburg, and Genk finish fourth in this group with a point. A single and lonely point.
Ghent is a
Genk. Yeah, Genk.
No, I know I'm talking about Ghent, though. Ghent, the other GNT over there with the Canadian Canadian connections, because I'm calling Pozuelo Canadian now. They advanced in the Europa League. So the Ghent Genks can still perhaps play each other. Can't now this year because he's out. But nonetheless, look, Salzburg has actually played very good against Liverpool yesterday, and it was a tight group right to the end. Liverpool had they scored late, but they scored relatively late for their own comfort level to get the goal. And then, you know, Salah scored this insane angle goal to put it away. But the Salzburg really showed well for their first appearance in the Champions League and will be a tough out in the Europa League.
And it won't be their last appearance in the Champions League, I believe. Group F, Destination F. That's what it looked like, that group. And Inter Milan is the one going to the Europa League. Barcelona, with their B team, doing pretty well this week. But Barcelona, Dortmund moving on to the knockout stage. Inter Milan, third, going to Europa League. And Slavia Praha going home.
Precisely. Again, I go on with the look at some of those teams in the second place in their group. You've got Napoli, Dortmund, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid. There are some tough outs for the teams that won their group next time. And that's just an example of how strong everything is once you get to the round of 16. It's maybe boring up till then, but once you get to the knockout stage, it is a battle royale in the truest sense. So we'll look forward to that in February. Got some time for that, though.
February is going to be insane with the CONCACAF Champions League, the Europa Champions League, Major League Soccer starting. Yeah, there's going to be a few insane weeks in February, and we're looking forward to it. The last two groups in the Champions League, RB Leipzig winning their group, moving on, and Olympique Lyon finishing second, Benfica and Zenit both on 7 points. But because of differential by one goal only, Benfica moves on to Europa League, and Zenit goes home by a single goal. The differential of a single goal makes the big difference for Benfica.
Yeah, Benfica scrambled their way in. It hasn't been a great few years for the Portuguese league in European competition. For the Benfica having been the power of that country for a long time has not really looked great in European competition. They didn't look great in this one either, but they did scrape through the Europa League, which I think does matter. I mean, I know a lot of us, particularly in this part of the world, kind of look down our nose at Europa, but there's money involved in that. There's coefficient ranking points that matter to their federation. So these are all big moments here. But Lyon is the one team that everyone that finished first in their group that are going to be looking at and going, can we please, I want to go to France. I want to go to France, please.
I can take Lyon. Please don't give me Real Madrid because they finished second too. Yeah. And speaking of Group H, Valencia winning Group H, a bit of a surprise when we handicapped this group at the beginning of the group stage. Chelsea second, both equal on points, equal on differentials. It's the goals allowed that has been the difference here for Chelsea finishing second. Ajax finishing third and going to Europa League. Lille going home. Ajax will be a contender maybe for Europa League depending of the other big teams making the trip to the second continental tournament in importance in Europe. But Valencia and Chelsea moving on to the knockout stage.
And Ajax going out is the story here. Everyone's darling last year for good reason. I mean, you know, if you were just a neutral, it was hard not to fall in love with that Ajax team. But they got rated, not as much as Monaco did a few years ago, but they got rated enough that they went from being, you know, a contender to make a final. Probably should have made a final when you look at that semifinal and how it played out, and to go into the Europa League. But look, as you say, I'm looking at the 18 teams that are in already. I'm looking at sort of the top of the rest of the groups there, and I would put Ajax among five or six teams that I would count as the favorites heading into the round of 32 in the Europa League. It's hard to pick that, but nonetheless, that's the storyline from there. For the record, if I have to pick a favorite right now for the Europa League, I'm picking Sevilla. That's my pick to win the Europa League based on the teams that are remaining.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And we'll see in the February, when Europa League returns. Before we say goodbye today, Dwayne, quickly, CONCACAF had a draw yesterday for the Gold Cup 2020 run, the road to the Gold Cup 2021. We know 12 teams so far of the 16 teams that will take part in the 2021 tournament. Four spots are up for grabs, and there's a playoff system with two rounds that are going to happen to determine who is going to go to the World Cup in 2021, who's going to join Canada, and who's going to join the other countries that have qualified, like USA, Jamaica, Grenada, Honduras, Mexico, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Curaçao, Martinique, Suriname, and Panama, to not name them all, which I just did. But here's the matchup, Dwayne. Guadeloupe versus Saint Vincent de Grenadines, Barbados, Guyana, Bahamas versus French Guyana, Guatemala versus Montserrat. And the winners of these matchups will face, respectively, Haiti, Trinidad and Tobago, Bermuda, and Cuba. And the winners of these respective matchup will qualify for Gold Cup 2021.
Yeah, this is all based on the League of Nations or the Nations League play. Unlike World Cup qualifying, I have no problem with using the Nations League to qualify for the Gold Cup. In fact, that's what its purpose should be. It should not be to be asked backwards way into the World Cup, but that's a topic that we've beaten to death and probably will again in March. But what I'm more interested in seeing around these. Look, it's big for those nations. People that crap on the Gold Cup ignore how important it is for smaller nations, how important it was for a nation like Bermuda to get there last time, how important it is for even countries like Haiti to continue their forward momentum by getting back to another one. They have to win a tie to get there. But for the rest of us, we kind of don't tune in until it's time to actually play the tournament. But, this still has a little bit. It's nice to have a proper qualifying for it that involves all the nations. You know, I've said that for ages, that Canada needed to go through World Cup qualified, and they do now. So that's a positive, and we can worry about the World Cup stuff when we start to go through that slug of a repechage next August it'll start. Yay.
Exactly, next August. It will start tomorrow on the show. We'll be joined by Travis Clark to talk about the College Cup. Yes, our annual conversation about college soccer with Travis Clark. Well, we have a couple of those. Of course, the draft time this time and the beginning of the NCAA season, but the College Cup is this weekend in the NCAA, and we'll talk about it tomorrow with our favorite college football, the actual college football, like proper football, Travis Clark, tomorrow on the show. On that note, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larame, and this show at Soccer Today SBN. You want to learn more about Canadian soccer and other bonus shows also available on our Patreon feed, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. This week, you have Five Rings Extra special on Russia and the 4 years ban. You have a Soccer Today Presents talking about, Two Salty Talker podcast with Colm Vance. We've talked about the CONCACAF Champions League draw on Sunday night as well. A few extra shows this week on our Patreon feed. And make sure you go and subscribe and support us. This is how we make our living here. And you can go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. And we'll be back tomorrow. And until then, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.